It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for
it. Wait for it.
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Soze!
No, that's Matthew Soze.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yes.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Soze.
Yeah, we're going to go on a bender.
No, we're not.
Yes, we are. I'm going to drink some Baileys and unwind.
April Fool's prank on you in June. This is not Film Sociology today. This is Film Yap Radio once again. I'm Joe Scheer.
I'm Christopher Lloyd, and we've got with us another special guest star this week.
Richard Probst from The Independent Critic.
Yeah, and we're actually going to start off on a bit of a sad note today. The news kind of came down, honestly, about an hour ago, maybe a couple hours ago, that one of our esteemed hosts, heroes, if you will, Peter Falk, passed away. Chris, what's your enduring memory of Peter Falk?
Probably Princess Bride. I think for people of our generation, the Princess Bride is really the movie that he was in. I mean, he's most remembered as a TV guy, obviously, for Columbo, but he did a lot of movies. And I think Princess Bride, just is such that wonderful grandfather role in that. I think that's kind of the way everyone would like to remember him. And of course he was a favorite of our guest Matthew Soze, who just loved to reference Peter Falk things on the show here all the time. Just thought I'd mention a few of his movies. Wind Across the Everglades was his first movie, 1958. Murder, Inc. was another one. It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. Robin and the Seven Hoods, The Great Race, Love, Castle Keep, The Cheap Detective, The Brinks Job, and The In-Laws. He also did some like art film work in Husbands, A Woman Under the Influence. Also played in Wim Wenders Wings of Desire, playing himself in a very offbeat role, which I've written a column about on thefilmyap.com. Just go there and do a search for that.
I would say my memory of him, in honor of my mom, her all-time favorite movie is Murder by Death. I'll mention that, as even though I think I've seen like half of that movie, I'll list that as my memory of Peter Falk.
I'm impressed that you have a memory of Peter Falk. I have to confess, as you guys were talking about it, I was sitting there thinking to myself, I forgot that he was a film actor. I mean, he's Columbo for me.
Yeah, I was reading the thing in his obit today, and they were saying that he started off in stage and in television, early days of television, and of course, you know, that he lost one of his eyes to cancer when he was 3 years old. Yep. Most people know that because, you know, he wore the prosthetic his whole life and had the little bit of a cast to his gaze the whole. And so, you know, the agents told him when he was first starting out that you'll never work in film or television because of your eye. And look how that worked out. You know, he was won 4 Emmys.
Yeah. And it's his signature.
Yeah, really was. My favorite story here from the obit on Peter Falk was he said that when he was playing baseball when he was a kid and he would get a really bad call from the umpire, he would take out the prosthetic eye and hand it to the umpire. But as Matthew would say, let's raise a glass in memory of Peter Falk. So there are, in fact, new movies this week, though, to talk about. Mm-hmm. And the first up is Cars 2, the, I believe, 12th feature film from the Pixar/Disney animation giant. And this is, I believe, the second of their franchises that they've done a sequel for. Of course, Toy Story and Toy Story 3. Then they took, like, whatever it was, like 9 years off to between Toy Story 2 and 3. Mm-hmm. And now they've decided to sequelize, of all movies, 2006's Cars, which I think pretty much universally had been regarded as their weakest movie.
I wasn't crazy about it.
No. Yeah. Well, see, a lot of people, I still liked it. I still liked it a lot. Of course, it was about cars, and I'm a car nut. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like, when they had, you know, they have a character who's a, like a 49 Hudson Hornet, and I was just, oh, wow, all right, that's awesome stuff. But, so 2006's now sequelized Cars 2, and I think we've got an audio clip of that, so let's take a listen to Cars 2.
To come and see the world with me.
You mean it?
It is my absolute honor to introduce to you the first ever World Grand Prix.
Woo-hoo! Go McQueen! Oh, that's funny, Roger.
Just shot!
McQueen.
See you at the race.
Yes, you will see, Francesco.
Like this.
He is so getting beat tomorrow.
These Americans are clearly master spies.
Excuse me, ma'am.
This cannot be him.
Is he American?
Look out, ladies. Mater's fitting to get funky.
Extremely.
Then it's him. Finn McMissile, British intelligence.
Joe Mater, average intelligence.
McQueen and Francesco duel for that inside line as they head toward the first turn.
Lightning McQueen cannot win the race.
Instead of saying ka-chow, he's gonna go kaboom.
McQueen needs your help, Mater.
You know I'm just a tow truck.
It's his cover.
Brilliant.
Am I missing something?
No one realizes they're being fooled because they're too busy laughing at the fool.
Is that how you see me?
That's how everyone sees you. Isn't that the idea?
Mater! I'm sticking by you the way you always stick by me!
Ready?
Is the Pope Mobile Catholic?
Don't you care, though?
You gotta be kidding me.
You might think I'm crazy. Hang around with you.
It's the American spy.
Hang on.
Now or never. To have some headgum.
Gatling gun. Request acknowledged. That's
your one. Shoot, I didn't mean it.
Request acknowledged.
I didn't mean that guy to shoot.
Deploying shoot.
Come on in here!
Oh my gosh! Ah!
Make me a German truck.
Request acknowledged.
Check it out. I'm wearing Mater hoosier. Make me a monster truck.
Request acknowledged.
What the?
All right, there you go. Cars 2. No big surprises there. I guess you know what's going on. We have Lightning McQueen, played by Owen, or voiced, I should say, by Owen Wilson. Mater.
Owen Wilson's playing a car.
He is. He's good. He's really good.
He's so methodical.
That would have been more entertaining, I think.
Yeah. And then we have, of course, Larry the Cable Guy playing Mater. Again, voicing Mater. Although, but anyway, this is really is a little bit different than the first one. They there's a James Bond vibe definitely to it, an old spy thriller kind of thing going on, involving a car named Finn McMissile, and he's voiced by Michael Caine, and he's got a sidekick as well as Emily Mortimer, right? Does the voice? I can't.
Holly Shiftwell.
Yes, Holly Shiftwell, which is a decent James Bond kind of reference, yeah. Mm-hmm. But anyway, Mater becomes embroiled in this intrigue, turns into some sort of pseudo-spy, I guess you could say, one of the old mistaken identity ploys.
Yeah.
It's quite a bit different. You know, of course, the message there is quite a bit different than the first film, which is basically slow down. This one is, wow, isn't it cool to go really fast? You know, let's race around and let's put a big old engine on Mater, who was the kind of the driving force for Lightning McQueen in the first film, to slow down and smell the roses and enjoy himself.
Now he's got a jetpack.
Yeah, and this one he's got a jetpack and flying around and special magic things. now some of the critics have been kind of ragging on this, saying it's the first real failure. I wouldn't call it a real failure. It still had some level of entertainment, I think. It's definitely a weaker Pixar entry. I would go so far as to say I liked it better than the first one, which I wasn't all that high on. But I don't know. What do you guys think?
I think the problem for me is that it's not a failure. I had to sit on the review for 24 hours because for me it's not a failure. You know, the animation is incredible. I thought especially that the shots of, you know, Europe and a lot of the European landmarks, that was incredible. Some of the vocal work was great. Some of it I despised.
Anyone in particular?
There's a certain cable guy who drove me nuts.
Clarence the cable guy?
Clarence the cable guy.
Lawrence, yeah. I believe Lawrence.
But it's a Pixar failure. Mm-hmm. You know, we've come to associate Pixar with animated excellence and films that really talk respectfully to families, both parents and child. And this is the first film that's been Pixar that for me absolutely failed to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely more of a kids movie, lots of action, that kind of stuff. People have questioned the fact that it's rated G, and yet there is some slightly risque humor there with Larry the Cable Guy. I probably would have given it a PG. I mean, there's a little bit of violence in it, you know, cars smashing each other and such.
I thought there was a lot of violence in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. For a G-rated movie, I would agree.
I still enjoyed it, but I can't disguise the fact that I was very much disappointed in the film. I mean, I do recommend it for people who just want sort of a popcorn movie or people who have small children and who are going to want to see this and will be entertained by it. I think the way I put it in my review was that, you know, like with Toy Story 3, you know, they visited those characters three times, and each time it seemed to get a little deeper, a little more sentimental, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. But you could feel the heartfelt devotion that the filmmakers, the animators, took to revisiting those characters and seeing them evolve. And I don't feel anything like that here. I just feel like, let's bring them back. Let's put them into some antics. Let's sell $1 billion worth of Lightning McQueen and Tow Mater toys,
yeah,
and Happy Meals and things. Mm-hmm. And I know that's a really cynical thing for a film critic to say, to talking about the money, because, I mean, you know, the whole money part of the business is always there.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I still liked it. I still gave it, I think, 4 out of 5 yaps. Mm-hmm. I would still go see it. I have, I believe, all 11 Pixar films on DVD or Blu-ray. Mm-hmm. This will not be among them.
Yeah. Mm. I would definitely agree with you with all that. And I do want to take issue with one thing, and I mentioned this on the Film Me app. I've talked to some of our other people about it on Facebook. In the first film, Mater introduces himself to Lightning McQueen by saying, "My name is Mater," like Tuh Mater without the Tuh. In this film, he calls himself Tow Mater. At the beginning, he introduces himself to someone else as Tow Mater. And I, of course, some of the merchandise, the T-shirts and the like.
Are you suggesting that Tow Mater has developing identity issues?
I think I have a problem with it. I think it the very least it's an inconsistency with Pixar, which is a very rare bit of inconsistency, I'd say, or else they are just kind of bowing to this pressure, or else they're really saying, well, we didn't think maybe everyone got the joke. That, you know, he's a tow truck, and his name is Mater. He sounds like Tomato. Ha ha. A bad joke to begin with. But, you know, cutesy on a kid's level, maybe.
Hoosier Motor Club protested them so much over that.
But it's annoying. I'm sorry. I'm a stickler for details.
I'm a stickler for... So we were talking about, you know, the bad guy in this is not really a bad guy. Lightning McQueen's opposition is an Italian open-wheel race car. Mm-hmm. Named, was it Francisco Bernoulli?
Yeah, Francesco.
Francesco Bernoulli. And there's a lot of fun stuff there in that the fact that he has open wheels as opposed to like a NASCAR-style car like Lightning McQueen.
With fenders.
That all the female cars were really enamored and thought he was hot stuff. And
yeah.
Lightning was getting jealous. And that was very funny, though. But, you know, Bernoulli, Bernoulli, just sounds like a nice Italian name. So I looked it up. Named after... the Dutch-Swiss mathematician Daniel Bernoulli. So Bernoulli is actually a Dutch and or Swiss name. It has to do with fluid dynamics. So what that has to do with racing cars, I don't know. Maybe it's something with like hydraulics in racing cars. I don't know. Yeah. But anyway, so that's my stickler effect right there.
So we have a lot. We're talking a lot of details. Why don't we talk? A little more about the film itself, what worked for me, and I get to reference one of my favorite films that no one else likes, is Speed Racer. it looks like Speed Racer a lot of times, a lot of the race scenes do. as far as being very colorful and having these kind of overhead sweeping shots. But to me, the racing again, and now I believe a couple of our colleagues, Austin Luger, one who was on here last week with us, very intensely hated this movie. and he, I don't know if it was him or if it was Nick Rogers or someone else even who mentioned that it was very slow. I think it was Austin who said that. The racing was not exciting, much as in the first film. It was not very exciting. You don't expect to see lots of, you know, scintillating race scenes. It's, you know, it's very chatty in the races, even though they're going against each other. And it moves slowly. It's not cut, you know, it isn't cut quickly enough to really amp up the excitement. But, you know, I mean, like you said, the kids are going to love it. And I'm the one that's like, well, I want more than the kids are going to love it, because, you know, I'm kind of a kid myself. But, you know, that's really the best thing you can say about it, is it's not terrible. It's worth buying a ticket for your kid. I don't know if it's worth buying a ticket for yourself, but it's all right, you know, which is very damning kind of praise, I think.
But considering how much action it had, it's a horrible use as well of 3D.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Let me stress that, because that's unusual for Pixar as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what's the call here? What's the sound effect? Are we doing the...
I think I'm going to go with the one we pulled of you a couple months ago of, it's not hella bad.
Okay, there we go.
Yeah. It's not hella bad.
All right.
I still would recommend it, but I think I'm in the minority. I think Cars 2 is actually, believe it or not, Cars 2 is coming in lower on the Rotten Tomato meter than Bad Teacher, our next film.
Wow.
Bring it.
So speaking of Bad Teacher... I don't know. When I first heard about this movie and saw the trailers and everything, I pretty much said, it sounds like a ripoff of Bad Santa. You know,
that's just what I was thinking.
It's just, you know, taking a lovable, iconic, you know, I mean, who doesn't love teachers? Mm-hmm. as opposed to teacher unions.
There were certain teachers.
Oh, really? You guys hate, I mean, you know, the concept of teacher.
Oh,
don't you love
the concept
of a teacher?
I like the idea of a teacher.
Yeah. My cousin is a teacher, so, you know, I have that, but... I was thinking the other end of the spectrum, of course, loving teachers. You know, there's always those one or two,
oh.
Right?
If everyone talks about bad teachers nowadays. I mean, I'm old enough that, you know, I still had some old school teachers when I was in elementary school. We had a teacher, I did not have her third grade name, Miss Hooker. And
wow.
No one messed with Miss Hooker.
Paid the price.
Oh, I'm not kidding. She walked around her classroom.
What a horrible pun.
She walked around her class with an old 5-iron that she had removed the head from. So she basically just had this, like, you know, 4-foot-long metal
steel
staff.
Yep.
And she would walk around and slam it on kids' desks. So, like, all the tops of the desks in her room were all scarred up and messed up.
That's positive reinforcement.
Yeah. Would not last a week in today's.
Do we have do we have some audio for
this
one?
We absolutely do.
All right.
Here we are.
Are you excited for tomorrow?
Is tomorrow Saturday?
No, it's the first day of school.
Yeah, I'm not gonna go to that.
But it's mandatory.
Ooh. Give a
Elizabeth, you shouldn't be teaching. I mean, I can't think of anyone less suited to being a teacher.
I don't need a blackboard or a classroom to set an example. So stupid.
Morons!
Hey, Elizabeth, you wanna, like, grab a bite sometime?
You still a gym teacher?
I am, yeah.
Then no.
Okay, cool. Well, awesome. This went great. All right.
From now on, my full-time job is finding a guy who's gonna take care of me.
Hi there.
Scott Delacorte.
Elizabeth Halsey.
On the new sub.
How the watch? Is that a Jaeger LeCoultre?
The family business.
I love how his eyes sparkle when he smiles.
I wanna sit on his...
Hey, guys.
Hey. So, did you and your wife just move to town?
I'm not married. I actually just got out of a relationship. She has such a big heart.
Enormous. If I got a new pair of boobs, he'd be all over me. But they're really expensive, right?
Yeah, and you gotta get two of them. Who knows? Maybe you'll win the bonus.
Damn it!
What bonus?
For the state test. Whichever teacher has the highest scoring class gets a bonus.
Things are about to change around here. Recess is over.
We're having our car wash this weekend. Last year's car wash raised $6,000.
Let's do this.
Whoa.
Lauren Rissman's dad called. He said we should have a car wash every weekend.
That's bonkers!
you can let me know, but I'd rather...
There is no way that LeBron will ever be Jordan. Call me when LeBron has 6 championships.
That's your only argument?
It's the only argument I need, Sean!
Now, who has the answer to my question?
You, Chubbs.
He's,
Whoa, wait!
Twilight, what do we talk about in class?
Don't throw at her. Throw through her.
Sign my yearbook.
Hold my balls.
All right, and, well, you, before we listened to the trailer there, Chris, you said you were kind of worried it was kind of a ripoff of Bad Santa. I will kind of go on record and say that's exactly what it was. and that's both a good and a bad thing. It doesn't really go as far as Bad Santa does. It doesn't go the distance as we talked about a little bit before we went on the air. Bad Santa was a black comedy, a pitch black as night comedy. Yeah. This one is
more of a raunchy comedy.
Yeah, this one is a Twilight comedy. You know, this one is a mid-evening comedy. It's the dark blue / purple skies kind of thing, and I don't want to really hammer on Cameron Diaz too much, but I think some of this is just her limitations as an actor. She just can't play a jerk to the extent that, say, Billy Bob Thornton does. And before anybody says that this is a kind of an unfair comparison, I do want to point out that when you name the movie Bad Teacher, you are more or less welcoming comparisons to Bad Santa.
Yeah.
You know, and in any future movie, you could just say Bad Insert Occupation here and, you know, make a movie about it. But, you know, but still, this one does all right. There's some really great jokes. Jason Segel's very good, as we were just talking about off mic. The supporting cast is good, although we don't quite get enough of them. And I would like to at some point talk a little bit about Lucy Punch, who is kind of up and coming. And Richard, you said you were kind of a fan
of her.
She's
the new object of my affection now.
Yeah. It's very weird because she's very attractive, but also very not attractive at the same time.
Absolutely.
And it's very weird. And it's almost creepy.
You know, she reminds me a little bit just in that whole Pink, the singer Pink.
Uh-huh.
You know, that thing.
Not like her.
Well, that's just it. It's like, to me, she's like simultaneously attractive and repulsive.
Yeah.
And I think Lucy Punch, she's been in a few other roles. Mm-hmm. Where she does kind of a similar thing, where she's obviously a physically beautiful woman, yeah. And yet they show aspects to her mm-hmm. personality otherwise, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know, obviously they do certain things in the movie to make her unappealing physically as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, she was a lot of fun, although, who was it that pointed out, it was Austin Luger in his review on thefilmyup.com, I think he said something great, is it's really enjoyable with these two characters going at each other, but when you think about it, there's really no reason for them to be going at each other. I mean, yeah. The whole idea is that they're both sort of into this Justin Timberlake character, this new substitute teacher who comes from a wealthy family. But, I mean, almost immediately it's clear that he likes the Lucy Punch character. He's not interested at all in the Cameron Diaz character. And the Cameron Diaz character, Elizabeth Halsey, seems to pretty much realize that and recognize that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at some point the whole... you know, boob vision quest becomes less about specifically getting boobs to get him, but more like getting boobs to get some other rich sugar daddy.
Yeah, yeah, and that is her, that's her quest to the movie, is she wants some fake boobs. So she's saving up her money thinking that she'll land a guy that will let her quit this job, which a very funny gag toward the beginning of that movie is that she walks in the first day of class and immediately starts showing them Stand and Deliver, and Dangerous Minds, and Lean on Me, and all of the...
Yeah, stories of inspirational teachers and educators.
Yes. And somehow this is going to educate her kids. Not that she really cares that much about it. But, you know, there's some... And I guess the whole idea is that she's going to show heart as the movie goes on, and she does that to an extent, but she's still a pretty reprehensible human being, I think, even toward the end of the movie. And, you know, and that's what they're going for. You know, she's not out to become nice, but the idea is you like her because she's such a total... Not curmudgeon is not even a good word for it. That's not even... doesn't go far enough. She's a jerk. She's a total jerk.
But I thought she had glimpses of humanity. I mean, very, very brief, very quick, but... I mean, she had moments where, you know, she would be nice to a kid or, yeah. And not even just the Sandler ripoff scene.
Yeah.
But, see,
there's a Sandler ripoff.
There's a major. Actually, see, I would call this Bad Sandler, not Bad Santa.
Yeah, okay, that's I can see that.
For me,
Adam Sandler is not in this movie, though.
Adam Sandler's not in this movie, but it has a lot of that same type of naughty humor. There's kind of a heart to it. There's occasional sweetness to it. And, of course, there's kids, which there seems to always be in a Sandler film.
Yeah, but it's mostly, you know, her slapping kids in the back of the head.
Well, yeah.
And, you know, take off that stupid hat and, you know, try not wearing that stupid sweatshirt all the time. And,
yeah.
You know, you're a moron. There's actually a scene where she's writing notes. You know, she's correcting her kids' papers, and she's writing really horribly inappropriate things on their papers.
And every teacher is going to see that and think, I've always wanted to do that.
Yeah. Yes.
I really love the LeBron part with the gym teacher.
I have laughed every time I've seen that.
You don't have a clip of that, do you?
I wish you had a clip just of that. See if you can maybe, I don't know. Can you
where Jason Siegel and this kid are arguing about LeBron versus Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
The coach says Jordan has 6 championships. And the kid's like, that's always what you come back to. Is that the only argument you have? And he says, that's the only argument I need.
Yeah. And it's just, it's the way, it's both the way he says it, the look on his face. It's so like, seriously, this is the most elementary argument. And this is it. You can't get past it. And he's very angry about this. And he yells very loudly at him in doing that. And also, I love the way he indicates 6. He uses all 5 fingers of one hand and then the thumb on the other one to be 6.
If I can just go far afield and actually wade into that argument. So LeBron James is, what, 25, 26 years old?
Yeah.
Do you know how many championships Jordan had at 25, 26?
That's a good question.
Zero.
I got it. I got it right here.
Oh, let's
go. Here we are.
There is no way that LeBron will ever be Jordan. Call me when LeBron has 6 championships.
That's your only argument?
It's the only argument I need, Sean!
You know what really puts that joke over the top is the fact that he calls him, you know, he uses the kid's name at the end.
Yeah.
Somehow they just, he's making it personal.
Yeah.
I'm gonna disagree with you guys a little bit. I actually really liked Cameron Diaz in this. I don't think they were trying to make her a black-hearted character. I think they're trying to make her a character that didn't care about anybody but herself. But then we shows that she does care enough a little bit about selective people. You know, the one or two people she finds. Like the character from the played by the Office actress, his name
Phyllis Smith is her name.
Phyllis Smith. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's never really. I mean, she takes advantage of her, but she's never nasty to her.
Yeah.
I really thought it was Cameron Diaz's best role, really, since There's Something About Mary. Mm-hmm. I thought she was really enjoyable in it, and I think the movie that they built around her is not as strong as the role as written and what she did with it, but.
It's kind of a subtle distinction for me. It's not so much that she did a bad job, like I said, but it's that it's just hard for her to play. I always felt like it was Cameron Diaz playing a character. And going back to Billy Bob Thornton again, I felt like he was Willie. He was this miserable, completely black-hearted human being. But for her, I felt like, you know, this is Cameron Diaz winking with us at the camera going, look at me being a jerk, you know, I'm being mean. But... you know, but it's okay. You know, she does a fine job. She's not bad by any stretch of the imagination. And her stuff with Phyllis Smith is very good.
The one part where you did see a little bit of sweetness there, it's funny, is she used her evil black heartedness for sweet purposes.
Yeah.
And that was where there's this whole subplot about one nerdy kid in the class really liking the popular girl and keeps making these overtures of increasing, you know, obviousness to get her attention. And, you know, they're just flaming out. And to the part, you know, what everybody always tells kids in that circumstance is just pour out your heart and tell you how I feel. And he keeps doing this more and more and just keeps flaming out worse and worse.
Yeah.
And finally, the Cameron Diaz character takes him aside and says, look, I was that girl in school. I would never have gone out with you, and she will never go out with you. So just hang it up, kid, because you're not going anywhere.
And then she does something. I don't know that we want to spoil the payoff to that, but then she does something else.
Yeah, but I really love though, you know, that she used her nastiness for a good purpose.
Yeah.
You know, telling the kid, like, look, it's nice that you have this feeling, but it's never going to work, and you need to move on and take, you know. I guess I appreciated that moment because I really would have loved it if somebody had done that with me when I was that kid.
Yeah.
You're not still that kid?
I'm married now.
At some point, that drops away. As she knows, that drops away at some point.
This film, for me, was a film where I was more interested in the supporting characters.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I so bought into Miss Squirrel, which was the Lucy Punch.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
I loved her. I loved the character. At the end, I was angry with how she was treated.
Really?
I mean, I really was bothered by how she... To me, she was the worst treated one, and, you know... Cameron Diaz was never that. I mean, redemption, give me a break.
Yeah.
And I thought Jason Segel, mm-hmm. considering he was basically a skeletal character, did amazing things with that.
Oh, I mean,
I would have loved to have seen them, I think, in the lead roles.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Timberlake was good.
Yeah.
But again, he showed his limited range.
Yeah. And his character, too, was almost a red herring in to a degree. Mm-hmm.
Well, I've noticed that his best roles so far have been in this and The Social Network, in both of which he plays tools.
Yeah, yeah. Go figure.
Imagine that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think in general, though, we like this movie. Is that so?
Yeah. I'm leaning positive toward it.
Yep.
I'm going to, okay, nobody's heard this, so check this out.
How neat is that? That's pretty neat.
All right.
Well, you want to take a little break and we'll come back with the video store?
Let's take a break.
Let's do it.
Oh, hang on.
All right, let's not do it. Let's wait a minute.
All right. No, I'm good. I got it. I thought you guys were going to... God, hang on.
Jesus. Well, you are listening to Film Sociology, otherwise known as Film Yap Radio.
That's right.
Here on WFYI HD to the Point.
Break time.
Any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs. You know who I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store.
Let's open the video store. This week we have quite a few releases.
Yeah, busy week.
Yeah. We're going to start off with one I have not seen yet. Matt Damon, Emily Blunt, right, in The Adjustment Bureau.
The Adjustment Bureau, a freaky deaky based on a short story by Philip K. Dick, also known as the Blade Runner guy.
Yeah, Total Recall guy.
So let's take a listen to The Adjustment Bureau.
Are you a registered New York voter?
Do I sound like I am?
David!
I gotta go. Sorry.
How was that? I don't know.
That's crazy.
You challenge me in those shoes?
Are the people who make sure things happen according to plan.
We monitor the entire world.
Oh.
Can't outrun your fate, David.
You've just seen behind a curtain that you weren't even supposed to know existed. This is your plan, and we're determined to keep it that way. You bumped into a woman this morning on the bus.
Were you just staring at my legs?
I was defenseless against the dress.
What does that have to do with anything? Your path through the world is supposed to have been adjusted. You weren't ever supposed to see her again.
If you truly love her,
just walk away.
If you stay with her, it not only kills your dreams, it kills hers.
I don't care what you put in my way, I'm not giving up.
They're making a run for it.
What the hell is going on?
I need you to trust me.
Okay.
All I have are the choices I make, and I choose her.
Just remember, we tried to reason with you.
Alrighty, the Adjustment Bureau. Kind of one of those movies that, you know, definitely looks familiar. You know, a little bit of Dark City, if anybody's seen that one. A little bit of Blade Runner, a little bit of this, a little bit of Memento. You know, if I was to summarize the work of Philip K. Dick, you know, he often wrote about these things of alienation and, you know, your mind being controlled and are your memories real and, you know, people who think that they're human but they're not, they're androids or some other. So if I was to sum up Philip K. Dick's, you know, work in a single sentence, it would be something like, are my thoughts really my own? And that's really the basic theme of the Adjustment Bureau, where, you know, this character is finding out that, you know, there is no real such thing as fate, or at least there hasn't been for a long time. And that, you know, there are people controlling us, these bureaucrats slash angels slash meddlers. And it's just an interesting story. It's a good movie. It's not a great movie. It's one of those ones where it's just propelled by the plot. The plot keeps moving relentlessly forward. And with all the freaky deaky mind stuff, it's got momentum that never really stops. We don't really get into the characters too much. They're kind of just puppets that sit there, you know, for us to watch them react to stuff. But still, just one of those, you know, kind of a good movie, not a great movie.
There was something about Blunt and Damon that just felt off balance.
Yeah, it didn't really work.
It didn't work for me, and so it didn't hold my interest. I didn't hate it, but
All right. That is the Adjustment Bureau. So what do we think of that?
We thought, well, you thought.
Now that was a good movie.
So our next movie is Cedar Rapids, which
yes.
Richard, I believe you want to talk about that one.
I loved Cedar. This, for me, so far, is the best comedy of the year.
Wow.
I'm willing to go out on a limb and say that. And
I saw this one.
I think we've got a clip of this one.
Yes, we do.
Right?
Awesome.
Here we are.
You were, what, 16? And I'm thinking, here's a kid who's going to go places. And then somehow, you just didn't.
I can't.
Tim Lippy didn't know where his life was going.
I need you to go down to Cedar Rapids and prove Brown Star's a good outfit.
Oh, sweet.
But that was before Cedar Rapids.
Incredible. There's palm trees. The whole place smells like chlorine. It's like I'm in Barbados or somewhere.
This insurance convention is important.
You can count on me.
One thing. Steer clear of Dean Ziegler.
Double stock my minibar, please. And then getting some honey on your stinger? I love it.
The Rhino. What's the matter, friend? You never seen a chocolate vanilla love sandwich before? This is the party headquarters right here.
Of course, I have my guilty pleasures of antiquing.
Josh, let's do it.
Okay. Cream cherry.
Cream cherry? This one's weird.
You look like R2-D2.
That's not what he sounds like.
I'm having a perfect moment.
Insurance agents get people's lives back on track.
You are a hero. You're a Superman type.
You gave me five!
Just give me your hand, bro.
I don't trust people with ponytails.
Ed Helms.
If you want a party, you let me know.
You got it. Party hardy.
I made love to a woman. She's not that pretty yet.
Her mouth tastes like cigarettes.
John C. Reilly.
If you want to survive in this business, you got to dance with the tiger.
How do you make the tiger dance?
You got to show him a little teat.
I don't even want to know.
I'm so bummed out! I'm so bummed out!
Where is Timble?
He's practically my best friend at this point.
You just met him 2 days ago.
You're probably uninsured.
No!
Timble!
Hey! I'm straight up gangster, and I always keeps one in the chamber in case you pondering.
What happened back there?
I looked up and Ronald was talking like a ghetto person.
But I do a pretty convincing Omar from the HBO program The Wire.
Cedar Rapids.
What happened?
I got beat up, got completely blotto, and befriended a prostitute. It was awesome.
Someone deserves 2 bags of honey roasted peanuts.
2 bags. Super awesome.
Okay, so here you have the perfect role for Ed Helms. You have this, you know, this conservative insurance agent who's going off to the big city, probably for the first time in his life, to go to this insurance convention.
Big city of Cedar Rapids.
Yes. Oh, yes. It's thriving there, you know? I mean, come on. This was an awesome resort-type motel.
Hey, we live in Indianapolis. We're not allowed to rag on anyone else. Our city gets ragged on all the time.
Hey, when Cedar Rapids gets a Super Bowl, they can start talking smack about Indy.
Yes!
Suck it, Cedar Rapids!
So Ed Helms, right, he plays the naive character, which he's done pretty well,
he's
right?
He's done pretty well. But they gave him a bit of an edge here, which he pulls off because he's got that face that just looks like he could bug out at any given moment.
Yeah.
And he pulls it, but he also he knows how to control it. Yeah. So for me, that worked. You know, then you have that matched with John C. Reilly.
Yeah.
Who's...
Yeah, John C. Reilly has the real over-the-top role in this, you know, where he's just the obvious big guy with a big personality making lots of, and he gets a lot of big laughs. I guess that would be my big complaint with the movie. I liked it. I was not crazy about it. For me, it just did not have a lot of really big laughs. It was a lot of more observational comedy, a lot of stuff. I mean, like, you know, the things we just heard there was probably most every one of the major laugh lines in the movie was in that clip. You know, it's much more of a low-key type of comedy. And my other complaint about it was the Ed Helms character. I was just like, I've seen this guy. I've seen this guy in The Office for six or seven years.
Yeah.
I've seen him in The Hangover and The Hangover 2 now.
Yeah.
And I kind of want to see him do something else. It's sort of like the even though you can like someone doing something in a particular role.
Yeah.
I've seen that too many times from him now, and I was just like,
Vince Vaughn syndrome.
Yeah, I mean, and it really is. And this place where it's, you know, he's playing this incredibly naive character, you know, a grown man in his mid-30s maybe, who, you know, seems to have not progressed past the age of about 15. Mm-hmm. And you're just like, is that really plausible in so many different settings with so many different characters?
Yeah. For me, the thing I really liked about this movie was it's an adult comedy. It is not filled with people who are in their early 20s. That, you know, they're not mining the various demographics and just making sure they have everyone who's young and hot and, you know, kind of covering. No, they do have some diversity, of course. They have, is it Isaiah Whitlock Jr.? Is that his name? Yeah.
And he's really good.
Anne Heche is terrific.
I think this is her best performance in years.
Oh, yeah.
She was
easily
amazing in this.
Yeah.
Is it her only film performance in years?
That's mean, Chris.
Hasn't she been mostly on television?
She's been on Hung for the past couple seasons, doing some of that stuff. But, you know, John C. Reilly, you know, none of these are, I mean, Anne Heche you can debate, but she's not, you know, she's not dolled up to be really sexy, you know. You know, none of these people, they're not going for the look at all these hot people on screen. They're look at these schlubby kind of, you know, middle-aged people.
They kind of look like insurance salesmen.
They do. They do, yeah. And, you know, it's a good little ensemble. It's not, to me, it's not like,
you know, two or three best comedies of all time or anything, but it's very good comedy for this year. I might agree with you, probably the best one of the year so far.
It's been a weak year for comedy.
Yeah.
I'll go there, and I'm hoping we have better this year.
Yeah. But this is very solid, very solid, very worth seeing.
All right. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of outvoted, but I think the consensus here is we like this, right?
Sure.
All right.
Yep.
Now that was a good movie.
All right, we got a few others here that we'll just kind of go through fairly quickly. I'm not sure how many of us have actually seen this. Has anybody here seen The Eagle?
I have not.
Is that Shia LaBeouf?
That was the historical drama set in like Roman times.
Oh, that one.
That's no, Channing Tatum.
Channing Tatum.
Channing,
and Jamie
the
Bell.
The charisma vacuum.
And Jamie Bell.
Between them all, they have one emotion.
Yeah.
Channing Tatum has half an emotion.
Right. Don't know. I haven't seen it. We do have a review of that up at thefillmeup.com. Diary of a Wimpy Kid, Roderick Rules, sequel to a surprise smash hit from a year or two ago.
Mm-hmm. I'm embarrassed to admit I've seen that.
Roderick Rules?
No. Yeah, I have.
Okay, give us your 30-second review.
Roderick Rules. If you saw the first one, it's worse than that, but you'll probably still like this one. And if your kids like the books, they'll like the film. Mm-hmm. No one else is going to like the movie.
Okay. We've also got Unknown with Liam Neeson, which is kind of like a seems like a ripoff of some other Liam Neeson movies.
I have seen this. It's kind of an Alfred Hitchcockish kind of thriller for a while.
I thought you were going to say Hitchcockian.
Hitchcock. Well, that's a lesser film critic would say Hitchcockian. But it's got the Alfred Hitchcock vibe for a while. He's in a strange place. He's, you know, sort of an outsider. There's some mistaken identity going on, or some perceived mistaken identity, and then there's sort of the twisty thing toward the middle slash to the end, and then it turns into something else. The end journey, it's fun getting to the end, but once you get to the end, you're kind of like, this is kind of stupid.
It just kind of looks like a quickie quasi sort of sequel to Taken to me.
It is in a way, except that he doesn't have that certain set of skills.
Okay.
He's just some regular, he's just some doctor that is in town for a, you know, and he's in Europe. I think it's, I want to say it's Berlin, for some convention, and things, he gets in a car accident, wakes up in the hospital, doesn't know who he is, and then he starts remembering who he is and goes to find his wife, and his wife is with some other guy who has the same name that he does and is basically him, and lots of kind of zaniness ensues from there.
So how would you rate it?
It was middling. I would give it maybe 3 yaps if I was, you know, if it was a good day. 2.5 probably is more.
If you'd been drinking.
More like it. Yeah. But you know, if you're bored and it's on cable TV one day, you might watch it.
This is a
ringing
endorsement
here. Yeah, so
don't
go out of your way to see it.
You're saying you would elect to use the Gino Wagner response and, I'm just saying it's snoozable.
Yes, that's good. Yes.
Okay.
All right. Matt Sosi made me promise that I would mention the Criterion collection release of Kiss Me Deadly. Film noir classic, but with a Mike Hammer character.
Oh.
I don't think I've seen it, actually. I'm ashamed to say, but we can't all see everything. But
yeah.
Kiss Me Deadly, new Criterion Collection movie, mm-hmm. out on Blu-ray, I think this week. And Joe, I think you also had another lesser known video release that you wanted to talk about.
Yes, I saw. And now I actually watched this last night after the Bad Teacher screening. It was called Electra Lux. And it stars Carla Gugino as kind of this, she's an older porn star who is...
She's like 25?
No, I think she's really older. She was one of the hangers-on for quite a while. She was the big star. And she, oddly enough, kind of has her hair cut to look like Tracy Lords. So, you know, with the straight across the bangs. And she actually looks like Tracy Lords quite a bit. But she is... She gets pregnant. She gets out of the business. But she teaches... she teaches these classes to women on how to keep their man happy in bed, how to be a porn star for your man in bed, basically. And lots of zany things happen. It's sort of a comedy, and there's a little bit of drama sprinkled in, but it's got a really strong cast. You know, Carla Gugino, I mentioned. Timothy Oliphant was in it.
I like him.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt plays this.
I love him.
Yeah, he Joseph Gordon-Levitt plays this blogger who is apparently lives with his mother. And so he's doing this, you know, X-rated, you know, porno, you know, doing like the history of porn, you know, he just idolizes Electra Lux, and he keeps getting interrupted by his mother, and then at one point his sister comes in and has hijacked his page and has put a bunch of lewd photos of herself up, and he gets really upset about that. He's really serious about his porn. You know, he's really into breaking down.
He's
all
a connoisseur.
This stuff. Yeah, he's a real connoisseur, and it's just very funny. It's at one point Julianne Moore comes in playing the Virgin Mary. If that tells you anything.
Okay, I'm there.
And then there's, you know, people like Kathleen Quinlan, of all people, is in this movie. Adrian Palicki, who was to play Wonder Woman, is in this, and she's actually pretty good. Emmanuelle Chicri, who was in Entourage, very easy on the eyes. She's actually partnered up with Adrian Palicki. And then Lucy Punch again is in this. So I had the Lucy Punch double feature last night.
She is?
Yes, she has kind of a smaller role, but
why didn't you lead off with that?
Well, I've already sold you on it. This is just the cherry.
Wow.
Yeah. And then Marley Shelton.
Is it getting
also
hot in here?
All right. Well, we'll talk about some sad passings in just a minute. I just wanted to a couple of bookkeeping things. We forgot to mention there are several other movies opening in Indianapolis this week, notably Beginners, which I really want to see, based on a true story starring Ewan McGregor and Christopher Plummer as a guy who's, I believe, his mother dies and then some time passes, and his father at age 75 comes out of the closet and reveals that he's gay, and it just ends up being about how their relationship changes and deepens as a result of this. And how his father essentially spends just the last few years of his life, you know, being who he really is. Yeah. It's been getting really good reviews. I am definitely going to try and sneak out this weekend to see it. Yeah. Unfortunately, they didn't show it to critics, which, theory to all people out there, if you want us to cover your movies, you have to show them to us.
Yeah.
And also, I've gotten a text while we were on air here about Bernoulli from my wife. Which says that Bernoulli theory is the theory of flight. I guess that's the dynamics of how the wind passes over the wings. I don't know. All she said was Bernoulli theory equals flight. So I don't have the whole story.
So what you're saying is at least one person's listening.
Yes.
But I've got to get one of those wives.
I'll take my wife's word on it. Seeing it as that she her mother is a pilot, her father is a pilot, her brother is a pilot. In fact, she came, I think, within a few flight hours and a test herself of being a licensed pilot.
Oh,
so
wow.
I'm betting she knows.
Maiden name is Bernoulli.
And there is a Bernoulli reference in Spider-Man 2, which I don't remember the whole thing, but if you go back and watch that, you can see him. When Peter Parker's talking to Dr. Octopus, he references him.
Yep.
Also, a bit of housekeeping. Midnight movies this weekend at Keystone Landmark. We have The Goonies.
Ooh.
And, oh, yeah.
Yep. And tonight at the IMA at 9 o'clock, The Wiz.
Oh, ooh, right.
Wow.
Nice.
Yep.
Come on down.
If any of you people are listening and associated with those two organizations, we would love to talk to you guys about doing stuff. I've actually tried. Come on, I want to see The Goonies. I like to see The Goonies again on the big screen. I want to see The Wiz.
But we did have a couple other passings beyond Peter Falk that we did want to mention. I wanted to mention Clarence Clemons, the big man from the E Street Band with Bruce Springsteen. Of course, the big man, one of the great saxophone players of the modern era in terms of pop music, actually had a fairly busy, you know, role doing minor roles in movies. He was in New York, New York. He was in Fatal Instinct, Blues Brothers 2000, and Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventures.
Mm-hmm.
And also, he stars in a documentary that just came out this year, and I think is going around the festival circuit. It's about it's like a personal diary about his trip to China, just talking about thinking about his life and who he is as in his role as the sax man. Mm-hmm. A movie is called "Who Do I Think I Am," starring and produced by one Clarence Clemons.
Wow.
And we've also got Ryan Dunn. I think he died last weekend. One of the Jackass guys, age 34, wrapped his had a terrible auto accident, I think, in his Porsche, and himself and a passenger were killed. Been a lot of speculation out there that he had been drinking the night of the accident, and he was drunk driving and so forth. Also wanted to mention this, obviously, just, you know, the notable passing, but also the huge controversy that Roger Ebert kicked off with a tweet about Ryan Dunn. I think the tweet just said, jackasses or friends don't let jackasses drive drunk or something like that.
Yeah.
Huge firestorm.
Yeah.
With a lot of the Jackass guys themselves tweeting responses to Mr. Ebert, and Ebert doing a whole blog item about it that last I checked had like almost 1,000 comments on it.
Wow.
So interesting thing there with the passing of Mr. Ryan Dunn.
Yeah. Yeah, and the one car accident thing is often code for drunk driving, you know.
Yeah, but still.
But it's been
I agree with the point that you shouldn't speculate about that, you know, especially like literally hours after someone has died.
Yeah.
You know, let's at least
wait. Too early.
And it's kind of a snarky comment anyway.
Yeah,
right?
let's at least wait for the toxicology report, and then we can do the whole, you know, go River Phoenix on him.
Exactly. Yeah.
One of the guys that I interviewed on my site.
What site is that?
TheIndependentCritic.com. Thank you very much, Joe. I would never say that. But Robert Zappia was a segment director on Jackass 3D, and he said that the whole gang is really taking it really, really hard. I actually checked in with him because I knew that he had worked on the last film. And so, yeah, you know, even though they had their wild antics and their partying ways, I mean, they were a tight-knit group that has worked together for years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, between the TV show and this, I think they all were, like, you know, like in their early 20s when they started doing this, and now they're, like, you know, guys in their mid-30s, late-30s, married kids and all that, so. Yeah, tough thing, passings going on there. So Joe, did we have any other new stuff, promotions happen on the film yet that we should tell people about?
Because
one of our favorite things that we just love to do is to give away free stuff.
We get free stuff all the time, and that's all we want to do is pass it on to you. I actually do have a full list of things, and we had a couple of additions just today. We talked about Diary of a Wimpy Kid, Roderick Rules. If I ever get around to actually putting that up as a contest, we are going to have a copy or two of that. We also will have The Warrior's Way, which I believe stars Kate Bosworth, came out last year, something about ninjas and
ninjas versus cowboys.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. No aliens quite yet. I think that's going to be the sequel. Jon Favreau's directing the sequel to that this summer. Let's see. I'll just finish the DVDs out later this month. We'll have Limitless, which is the Bradley Cooper film with Robert De Niro. And, of course, our movie pass giveaways, Horrible Bosses we just got today, Zookeeper, that's the one starring Kevin James, who apparently my son is a fan of because Justin Bieber is not.
Speaking of which, we should mention that they had an early screening of Zookeeper, which they invited critics to and then disinvited us to.
Yeah.
Should
we say that? Yeah, they do that sometimes.
Emphasis on dis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although I think they were maybe doing us a favor.
Yeah. That's true.
Then we'll have, as I said on our podcast yesterday, we'll be toning it down a little bit from the summer season. We will have A Better Life, which is a bit of a smaller film, fewer explosions per minute, I think, than a lot of the films. Well, we should mention, too, we're going to have hopefully a couple of things come up over the summer in Carmel, if you're in the Carmel area. Allegedly, if this ever actually happens, this month there's one, an outdoor screening of E.T. It's free. We have lots of stuff to give away.
I believe that's July 15th.
Yeah, I think it's the 15th. Consult thefilmyapp.com. We'll have an ad up the week before. Lots of stuff. You have kids, especially lots of kid-related movies and various trinkets to give away.
And
lots.
Didn't we get like a treasure chest from Disney full of stuff that we're going to be giving
did.
Away at that?
We did.
We were supposed to give it away at the one last month that got rained out.
Yep.
So we're going to have to give it away on the 15th.
Yeah. Now I'm actually breaking it up. We have so much that I'm breaking it up over a couple of screenings. So we have one of those in August. I think they're doing Toy Story 3. Again, we have, this is weather permitting. And I'm actually going to be in Lawrence on the 4th of July. I'm going to set up a table on Franklin Road and be giving away a few things here and there.
Right there on the road?
Not on the road. And this is actually at my aunt's house, and she doesn't know about it yet, so if she's listening, this is what I'm going to do, Aunt Debbie.
All right.
As long as you say it's okay.
Well, make sure to visit thefilmyapp.com to see all our wonderful views and get some of that free stuff. And also, don't forget to visit theindependentcritic.com with our friend, Richard Probst. Richard, thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much.
And we will be back. I will be back next week with Richard and Gina Wagner from Haunted Flower.
All right, Gina.
All right.
Of course, schedule pending. So.
All right. Well, you've been listening to Film Sociology, a film show here on WFYI HD to the Point, otherwise known temporarily for the summer as Film Yap Radio. Thanks for joining us, and you'll hear from us again next week.
Goodbye.